Welcome to the fourth edition of The Skyhook. I am your host, James K., and right now, you are listening to Dash Radio's Nothing But Net channel. Or actually, if you are one of the cool kids, unlike myself, you are tuning into the archived podcast version of this show on Podbean or the Apple Podcast app. If you want to be one of the cool kids, like I so desperately want to, and you want to find the podcast version of The Skyhook, you can find us on Podbean at theskyhook.podbean.com. I'll repeat that again because I'm having a hard time projecting right now. The link to that is theskyhook.podbean.com, or you can simply search The Skyhook Podcast on the Apple Podcast app, and it should be the first thing to pop up. So, as always, if you want to contact anyone at The Skyhook, you can do so at theskyhookmailbag@gmail.com. One more time, that is theskyhookmailbag@gmail.com. Or you can just hit us up on Twitter at the handle @skyhookin. Folks, I had planned to have a phone conversation with someone who knows everything about the Chicago Sky, prepared a while for this one, and I won't mention this person by name because they did a crappy thing by bailing on me in the last second, which means I'm going to be doing this one solo, which is just so fun because I have a cold and, like I said before, I'm having a really hard time projecting my voice because, and I have an ear infection. It's the perfect storm. But hey, I pull through because this is why they pay me the big bucks. Or no bucks. Whatever, I'm not bitter. I am. But I am recording this episode on June 12th, on the night before this airs. So let's get into it so I can get my dream sleep in an hour. So I missed the first week of the WNBA season just because I was on a trip. And regrettably, I didn't get to be at the home opener against the Storm, which sucked because I had been itching to get back to Wintrust ever since I covered the team last year. But I finally got to make my press section season debut in the second Sky game against the Storm. And I'm just telling you right now, there's something great happening at Wintrust. Like last year, you could kind of feel like something was just starting to be built in terms of like the culture in the arena. But this year, I don't know, there's something else going on here that has to excite you as a Chicago Sky fan. And I don't know if it's the acrobatics that occur in between quarters and timeouts or the early season hope that maybe this team will squeak into the playoffs after not being able to make it to the postseason the last 3 years. But, or maybe it's just like the new regime under James Wade that is coursing through this team and maybe radiating into Wintrust. But whatever it is, something amazing is happening here, and you just have to be excited as a Sky fan. And I guess if I was a betting man trying to figure out what has changed about this team from this year to last year, and I'm not a betting man because I'm unemployed and have no money, my theoretical money would be on what James Wade has been able to do in his short amount of time with this Sky. So someone tweeted out something interesting yesterday. It was like right after the Sky had made that statement win against the Mercury. And this person said something along the lines of, "This was a solid win, but last year the Sky had statement wins, and we ended up in 10th place. We are still only 3-2. I could not disagree more with this take. And look, no one is more of a pessimist than I am. The glass isn't only half empty, it's 4 sips away from being completely empty. But I am ready to say that this year's team is significantly better than last year's team. And yes, I mean, there's a lot of things that you can point to that might contradict that, but I mean, you can look at, like, turnovers are still a problem. I think the Sky are still in the top, or the bottom two, I should say, in turnovers per game. Defensively, there are still some holes that need to be filled. All the team's wins have also come at home, and, you know, you can also point to that, yes, they beat the Storm and Mercury, but those teams were without their best players, so, yeah, sure, those are all valid points, but I think that's only scratching the surface of, like, why this team has been able to make kind of a leap in the early on in the season. And I think we have to go more than just 1 inch deep into the ground with this topic in order to get to that point. And I think as I was just thinking about this on my ride home, I think that we have to start with this, like, to start off this topic, I should say, we just have to look at this year's roster compared to last year's. The Sky didn't make a splash in free agency. I mean, they re-signed Cheyenne Parker, Jamira Faulkner, and Allie Quigley, and they drafted Katie Lou Samuelson and Chloe Jackson. And I should also throw in there that they made that late preseason addition with Jantel Lavender, who's now starting. So yeah, that is a pretty significant addition for them. But in terms of them making a splash and really trying to get some new faces in there, there weren't really any major moves this team made in the offseason. So this is virtually the same team as last year's team under Amber Stocks. Of course, there are some differences in terms of health that you can point to. Like with some of these players like Steph and Cheyenne, I mean, they look like completely different players. Like Steph seems like she's significantly more healthy than she was last year, where she scuffled and wasn't really in her 2017 form. That, I mean, she did fantastic that year. I mean, Cheyenne, I mean, I can get into what she said after the game against the Storm later, but she looks like she's a complete beast and is ready to take on a bigger role. But if Amber Stocks was here, I think she would also argue that in terms of the differences between this year's team and last year's team is that Diamond and Gabby went into this season with a year under their belts. And I mean, I think it was Gabby even said that last year she felt like she wasn't as successful because she thought she could rely on her athleticism to propel her into being this, just being a competent WNBA player, and that the intellect of the veteran players of the WNBA kind of stopped her from being able to get to that level. I mean, and Diamond has just also made that leap that you have, and she looks like she's going to be, most nights, going to be number one or number two scorer. But the problem with, I think the biggest problem with last year's team is that Amber Stocks didn't command the respect that James Wade has already accumulated with this Sky team in only 5 games this season. The body language of the team just seems more relaxed, and there's a certain grit on and off the court that this team didn't have last year, which maybe explains some of the defensive lapses the team experienced through last season. Like, I think that when the team, maybe when like the team's chemistry isn't at its highest point, that sometimes what happens off the court can linger and like onto what happens on the court. And I'm not saying that there was any chemistry problems last year, but Amber Stocks didn't unite the team in the way that James Wade has this year. The team just seems more tightly knit, and I think that one of the better examples that I can give you, just kind of exemplifying the Sky's new demeanor under James Wade, it came during the post-game press conference after the Sky's win against the Storm last Sunday. And before I go into this, it just has to be stated, there is nothing more awkward and unsatisfying for the reporters, the players, and coaches that have to attend these post-game press conferences. Like, I don't have a solution for this, and I get that beat reporters need quotes to put in their game recaps for their stories due an hour after the game. But these press conferences, they're so sloppy and unorganic, and the questions asked are just not typically well thought out, since the press conferences take place 15 minutes after the games have concluded. I mean, just kind of building off of that, the players give cliche answers because of those questions that are not that well thought out. And those answers just lead to things that we've heard 100 times and we just don't really learn anything from. Like, when the team wins, coaches don't want to stick around for long because they want to get back to the locker room and be with the team. And just, I mean, that's the time when you can really build that chemistry. And we've seen that from James Wade this season. But, you know, when coaches, or like when a team loses on the other side of that, no one wants to talk immediately after the game just about how they failed for 40 minutes and how they, or if it's a close game, how they just lose a competitive match or game, if you want to call it, this isn't soccer. But all I'm saying is that like this dynamic is flawed. And the reason I bring it up is that you can definitely tell James Wade hates the press conference formality he has to go through after these games. And the interesting part of that, though, and it's probably the only thing that I've taken from the press conference interviews so far, is just how these, like, the Sky players have taken on that same type of personality that James Wade has. And I mean, and like what I'm about to say, I mean this in the most positive way possible, because I love James Wade and what he's been able to do with his team and how the team's attitude has been this season. They kind of have this FU mentality where it's like, it's us versus you, and it's not over the top, and it's not one of those, like, I don't know, it's not like what Dallas had last year a little bit. There's just roots of that FU mentality that you just have to love, and it's important for, if you're going to be a playoff team, to have that type of attitude. At a certain point, it has to be you versus your opponent, and you kind of see that from James Wade on the sidelines. It's kind of cool to see it in the press conference with the players as well. You have to be satisfied with that as a Sky fan. But you see that type of attitude in successful teams. I mean, when they're asked these ridiculous questions after games and they smirk or laugh at your question before giving a slightly sarcastic response, while other people at the podium just look down and laugh quietly to themselves. Like, teams with strong chemistry are just able to be loose up at the podium. And we're seeing that from this team this year with Wade and the rest of the Sky. Like, last year after the games, while one of the players answered questions, everyone on the podium looked like they were just sulking and just waiting for the press conference to be over with. With Wade, he kind of is just keeping people engaged, like, after the games. I think it was kind of funny when Cheyenne Parker was answering questions about her fantastic game against Seattle, which I will get into later, but Wade was joking around with Steph like the press conference wasn't even happening. Like, they were having their own separate conversation while Cheyenne was answering one of the questions from a reporter. And look, I know that some people might think I'm looking into this too much, and maybe you are the list, like, maybe you, the listener, are also thinking the same thing, but these little things matter when it comes to building a culture. And, you know, all playoff teams need the little things as well. And just going back to my point about how last year's team and this year's team are pretty much identical in terms of the players on the roster, I was talking to someone before the game who was close to the team. They were saying that the biggest difference between last year's team and this year's team is that this team has adopted Wade's personality in a way that they just didn't last year with Amber Stocks. And kind of just building off of that, I was talking to Maggie Hendricks from The Athletic, who, if you don't follow already, definitely do. She's fantastic, and we'll give you the latest Chicago Sky news. But the thing that I think speaks volumes to, like, where this team is at, that she told me, is that she said that the most successful teams that she has covered are the ones that, when she asks the coach what the team needs to do to improve, that the players of that team will repeat the same sentiment the coach says without even consulting the coach first, because they just buy into what the coach wants, and they just take on that personality of the coach, and they just take off from there. And that's kind of why I don't think I'm looking too far into this one, because the biggest difference for this team from last year, the culture has shifted from a team that has lost a lot in the last couple of years to one that seems to be re-energized and has hope. And you see it not just with the team, but with the fan base as well. And you really do have to give, if not all the credit, most of the credit to James Wade for being able to transform this team in such a short amount of time. Moving away from that culture segment, which I'm sorry that took so long, but it's such a key storyline in what the Sky are going to be able to do this season. And it's going to be, I think it's their biggest X factor in what this team's ceiling really is. But I'll move away from it now. I digress. And yeah, so the Sky have played 3 games since the last Skyhook show. So I think I'm just going to go over some of my biggest takeaways from what we've seen from the Sky in the last 8 days. I'm just going to go down my reporter's notepad and just give my quick takeaways from the notes I've just jotted down throughout the week. So yeah, let's start this thing off. So my first takeaway from this past week is that the Sky don't need an elite scoring effort from Ali Quigley like they needed in all of their wins last season. Last year was a mess for a lot of reasons for this team, but not having it a dependable number 2 or number 3 scoring option, I think, killed the Sky. Maybe not as much as the defense, because that obviously was a huge part of why they were unsuccessful last year and ended up in 10th. But I mean, the team was 7th in the league in points per game, but that didn't matter since the defense was last in the league in defensive rating and defensive rebound percentage. Even when the team scored, anytime the game became close, it just kind of seemed like the sky would falter a little bit when teams doubled Allie Quigley in the last couple minutes of the game. And there was just no one on the team that could really step up and complement Quigley in the way the Sky really needed someone on that team to do. You saw flashes from Diamond last year. I think she averaged like 16 points per game last season, and that's pretty solid for a rookie in the WNBA. But they really did need her to be the 20-point scorer that I think that she is going to become, if not this year, maybe a year or two down the line. She has that ability. But the Sky didn't have that version of Diamond last year. And they just had to depend on Allie pretty much every game. But going into this season, and just, you know, after the 25-point game that Allie had against the Storm in the home opener, she has been quiet offensively to her standards. And I don't think it's outrageous to expect more than what we've seen from her in the last three games of the season, just because she is an all-star. And yeah, I mean, just going down the line of what like the box score looked like, she followed up that 25-point performance with no points against Washington on 0 of 6 shooting, 4 points on 1 of 5 shooting in the game after that, and 8 points on 3 of 4 shooting against the Mercury. Teams are just letting other Sky players step up offensively to beat them. And so far this season, it actually has kind of worked for the Sky. And you can maybe make the argument that it has empowered players like Diamond, Stephanie Dolson, and Cheyenne Parker to take on a heavier load offensively. The Sky are third in the league right now in effective field goal percentage, three-point percentage, regular field goal percentage, and they are fifth in the league in points per game. So nothing they are doing on offense feels like it's forced. And even though Allie isn't getting her shots right now, the classic team first basketball concept of whipping the ball around until you find the open shooter seems to be working for the Sky right now. And I feel like a lot of people might be worried about Allie's production so far. And I can't argue with that just because of how lethal of a shooter she is. And it's crazy with someone with her talent hasn't been able to get anything going. But I think this is more of a positive for this team that they're able to pull out wins without their primary scorer getting it going at all. And Allie is not going to average the 9.4 points per game she is averaging right now. She is too crafty. She is too important for this Sky team not to just go out of their way to get her the shots that she needs to be the 17-point scorer that she was last year, or maybe 15 points per game, something like that. The team should be content that they haven't reached their ceiling yet, because she determines how high that ceiling goes. And for the Sky to be 3-2 with Allie only scoring like 13 points in the last three games, I don't know. And even though I am that pessimist, like I said at the top, I do think that this is actually more of a positive than maybe some Sky fans want to let on. I think that, I mean, she built Wintrust Arena, right? So she knows how high the ceiling is going to be. I trust Allie Quigley to get it going soon. And I think that as they go on the road until the 21st, I think it's something that we should be looking out for. My second biggest takeaway from this past week from the Chicago Sky is that if this team is able to establish a home court advantage over the rest of the league, this team's path to the playoffs is going to be much easier just based on what WNBA history suggests. So I think it is very easy to overreact to what we've seen from this team to start the season. And me and Chris kind of did that in our episode last week, which you should definitely check out on the Apple Podcast app. Self-promotion. I have already read some articles today calling what the Sky have a home court advantage over these teams just because they're 3-0 at home. And I'm just not there yet. And look, the Sky had three huge wins at home, but the facts still remain that the Sky have beaten the same team twice this season, and that team was without two of their top four players in Breanna Stewart and Sue Bird. The other team they beat in Phoenix, in a game that they almost lost, by the way, after being up so much, Phoenix was without one of the greatest scorers in basketball history. So again, don't get me wrong here, those wins were so real, and especially that game against the Mercury. Like I said last week on that episode with Chris, every team needs a blueprint win where they can look back during a tough stretch in the season where they can say, we need to play like this in order to get back on track. And I really do believe the Sky had that in the win against the Mercury. In terms of calling what the Sky have a clear home court advantage, though, I'm just not there yet. And it's not like the Sky are blowing these teams out at home. The box score is a little deceiving, especially since there was a point where the Sky were up 26 against the Storm, and they actually almost blew that game. But this team's net rating at home is still only 6.9. That's seventh in the league in terms of teams net rating at home. But when I look at what we've seen from this team so far and the potential of what they could do at home this season, I think of what Allie Quigley said after the home opener. She was asked about what contributed to the team's success that night being the home opener. And one of those things she talked about was just feeding off the energy of the crowd at Wintrust. Wintrust has been rowdy this season, and that type of energy that Allie was talking about is something we have seen every WNBA team that is somewhat built to win has benefited from. And this is, again, based off of WNBA history. Because I am a loser obsessed with basketball stats, I was going through the home and road records of every team since 2011, since WNBA.com conveniently doesn't provide any other team records from the years before that. The functionality of WNBA.com, too, is, it's odd because sometimes you need to go to other pages to be able to access other ones that you can't get to unless you go to specific pages first. If that sounded like word soup, it's only because the league's website is horrible and has the worst functionality of any basketball stat website. Anyways, God, that drives me up the wall. Anyway, I was scrolling through the standings since 2011, and after crunching some of the numbers off of my iPhone 6, shout out to that old device, I noticed that the top six teams in the league over each year since 2011 combined for a meager 53% win percentage on the road. Teams 4 through 6 had between like 6 to 9 wins on the road compared to the number 1 through 3 teams who averaged 9 to 13 wins on the road. So let's be honest here, the Sky aren't going to be a top 3 team this year. They're not ready yet. They're still young and developing chemistry, but what WNBA history suggests is that the top six teams in the league the last 8 years have dominated at home, but are closer to being slightly below the 500 mark on the road. And the thing is that the Sky don't even need to be a top six team to be in the playoffs, since we all know that the eight teams make it. So the lineups Wade is rolling out right now, they suggest that they want to make the playoffs, and he has gone on record saying that he wants to make the playoffs. So, so have Allie Quigley and Courtney Vandersloot. If they establish that home court presence that they kind of have so far to an extent, again, I'm not there yet, but who knows what this team will look like at the end of the season. The team doesn't need to be a road warrior to make the playoffs, but they need to continue the surge at home and be steadier on the road. Like, they can't repeat what they did in Washington. That was, I think Chris put it perfectly last week, that it's just one of those games that had it was like the greatest hits game from last season, where they turned the ball over, play atrocious defense, and let other teams just shoot the lights out from the perimeter. But if the team is steadier on the road, and if they want to make the playoffs, WNBA history suggests that they can just, if they do dominate at home, that they don't need to be an elite road team. So it's the Sky have struggled on the road, and they're about to hit the road pretty soon. It's not inconceivable for this team to make a run at the playoffs, just based on what WNBA history suggests. My third takeaway from last week's three games from the Chicago Sky is that they are going to miss Katie Lou Samuelson more than what the box score suggests. God, it's such a heartbreaker for so many reasons. I will be the first to admit that I was harsh on Katie Lou in last week's show, and honestly, I think it was fair based on what she looked like defensively. What Nafisha Collier did in that one-on-one matchup between her and KLS was sickening for Sky fans. I mean, maybe I'm actually alone in that, but if you go back and look at the tape, it was a rough one, and I won't do the whole spiel on that again, but it was rough, and the growing pains seemed like they were going to be worse than initially expected from a lot of people, myself included. She didn't play in the second game of the season, but her leap from her debut to what she did in her limited time against Elena Deladon and Natasha Howard, it was enormous. It really was. And I don't know what is going on with Elena Deladon this year, since she's only shooting 41% from the field as of June 12th, which is, you know, I'm recording this on June 12th. I think that the biggest obstacle that Lou is dealing with as she develops as a WNBA player is that, I mean, it's just the mental aspect of the game, and for her not to be tentative on both sides of the ball. And you really have to give her credit, because she took it to Deladon in that game against Washington. And, you know, Wade talked about her as a prospect, as someone who the Sky could utilize her length and that how her size can make her a capable defender in this league. And besides the mental aspect of the game, I think people mostly pointed out about her and her game in terms of criticizing it was that her defense was a little bit lackluster, and she improved her senior season quite a bit. But, you know, she, like we saw in the first game of the season, she struggled defensively. And I think we saw flashes of what Wade said a few months back when she was a prospect or someone that was on his radar, that it just makes me think that she's going to figure this thing out. And I mean, even the next game after that, she was doing the same thing with Natasha Howard. I mean, she had helped defensively, but she was staying in front of Howard and disrupting the flow of Howard's game in the 7 minutes that she played. But and then the worst effing thing happened. I have to say effing because I'm on radio. Lou takes that hard charge and fractures her wrist and is now out for at least 3 weeks. James Wade said after the game that it's a long season. It's a frustrating part because you cheer for all your players who come in and work hard, and you want to reward them with minutes. We'll keep her spirits up. We think she'll be fine. Before you know it, you'll see her back in the uniform. The problem with that statement is that it isn't a long season, and maybe mentally, but the season's like 3.5-4 months, and the Sky are already banged up as it is. Astu Nador is with her European team. Jameer Faulkner's status is still pretty much up in the air until she is definitively cleared to play again. And I don't know if anybody else noticed this, but in the game against the Mercury, I mean, after Diamond took a hard screen from Brittany Griner that sent her to the ground, like, she was shaken up afterwards, but I don't think it was just because of the screen, like, because of the force that Griner is, but it seemed like Diamond hit her head on the floor twice, and it made me wonder if she played through a mild concussion on that play, or the rest of the game, I should say. And I mean, she bounced back because she is freaking Diamond to Shields and she's a basketball goddess, but the Sky really didn't need their depth to take a hit in the way that it did when Katie Lou went down. And I mean, even Wade said after the game that he saw Lou turn the corner a little bit before the injury, and well, it wasn't after the game, it was after the injury was announced. But, you know, she said that, or he said that she turned that corner. And I think she was about to take on more minutes. And let's not forget what Katie Lou Samuelson is and what she's going to provide once she gets used to the pace of the WNBA. In 2017 and 2018 at UConn, Lou shot 47.5% from three on just over 6 attempts per game. I'm going to repeat that again because I don't think you appreciated it enough the first time. Katie Lou shot 47.5% from three on just over 6 attempts per game. If she ever finds a way to stay on the floor by improving her defense even marginally in the way that she has in the last 2 games, Lou can be that extra scoring option that the Sky may need later down the road. And who knows, maybe if Diamond, Quigley and Sloot aren't getting it together on offense in a game, that maybe you can put Katie Lou in as a spark plug off the bench and get you 8 points that you weren't going to get if she wasn't on the court or from somewhere else on the bench. She can be a key piece to this offense if she stays healthy and can stay on the floor. You also have to keep in mind that this is a roster where if you can shoot from beyond the arc in any capacity, you are going to get a lot of minutes. Lou was set for an uptick in minutes before this injury. It's such a shame considering where she was headed. I'm just so bummed about that. But, you know, but when she comes back, there should be hope that she'll be able to improve on what she established in those last two games. I asked James Wade after the game about his decision to be putting her at the four and putting her against some of the better fours in the game. And he said the Sky aren't there. They can't hide her, and she needs, and if she wants to be the best, she has to go up against the best fours in the league. That's where he sees her going, and hopefully the Sky get the version of her that is a dominant four. She has the length and has the ability, but it's still tragic being 3 weeks away from being able to see her on the floor again. What does a KD Lou have to do to catch a break around here? Honestly, Jesus. I'm going to move to my fourth takeaway. So my fourth takeaway from the Chicago Sky season is that Gabby Williams is the sixth most important player on the Chicago Sky right now. And I guess I should give my top five before I go any further than this. So as of right now, I would say that Courtney is number one just because she's the floor general that the team would be lost without and has quietly been the go-to player the Sky have needed in the tight games this season. Sloot is followed by Diamond because of her two-way impact. And, I mean, she flashes WNBA All-Star potential just going back to last season even. Allie Quigley is third because at some point they are going to need her scoring prowess, and she's just one of the biggest parts of this offense. James Wade said that when Allie Quigley was coming back from Italy that she is the motor of this team along with Sloot, so she has to be number three despite her struggles this season. Actually, you could argue that Diamond is 2-way and Quigley is 2-B because of the opportunities Diamond gets with how much attention Allie gets on offense. So maybe Diamond is getting those shots because of Allie. I think you could argue that for sure. But what Steph Dolson has done for this team with her ability to destroy the pick and roll and pick and pop, I mean, that has won the last two games for the Sky, if we're being honest. Just being able to jump out of that early lead because of what Steph does. And yeah, I think she deserves the fourth spot respectively because she pulls the opposing team's center out of the paint when such center is lost when Steph rolls or pops. So Steph is number four. The fifth player on this list is Cheyenne Parker for what she does on the boards. Before Steph handled her business in the last two games, I was wondering if the Sky were going to make a lineup change by inserting Cheyenne into the five so the team would be tougher on the boards, but they didn't, and Steph destroyed, so I won't go any further than that. But Cheyenne definitely personifies the toughness that James Wade demands from this team, so she definitely beats out Gabby, who does slide into the sixth spot. Going into the draft, I thought the Sky needed to find a backup point guard to fill in for Sloot when she was off the floor, because last year, whenever she left the floor, the team was just completely dysfunctional. Sloot wasn't perfect last year in terms of turning the ball over either, but there were times last season where the team would grab a defensive rebound and they would turn the ball over immediately or heave the ball down court because no one really had a feel for the offense and could really facilitate or like really get the offense going and push the ball like the way that Sloot does. So experimenting with putting Gabby at the one has to be one of the biggest revelations for this team. James Wade said it best when asked about putting Gabby at the one, and I'll give you the quote right now. "Gabby causes matchup problems for teams, for opposing point guards with her physical athletic abilities. I also think she's a good decision maker. I think it gives us an advantage with her at the point. It also gives us a bit of a different look. Because of her physicality, she's a different point guard than Sloot. She's a different player than Sloot." I 100% agree with what Wade is saying here, and she is a different point guard than Sloot, and I guess that's what makes her so dynamic. But I also think that Gabby has taken parts of Sloot's game and has commingled them with the best parts of Gabby's game. Like, Point Gabby is someone that I hope is used more often this season, because this is what her future looks like in this league. I really believe that. That's how great she has looked in these past few games. She's excelled in the pick and roll as a facilitator, and now that she's been moved into the front court, she could be that stingy defender that led the league in steals last year. Or steals per game, I should say. If we were constructing a playoff roster, Gabby would be the player that you stick on a team's best offensive talent. And she isn't going to close games, which I think that a lot of people, when you think of, you know, the most important players or the top six most important players, you're probably not thinking of the backup point guard in most cases, but Gabby isn't going to start. And I mean, game started is a useless stat anyways, but she could be someone who closes in games where James Wade goes back and forth between subbing offense for defense and vice versa. Maybe that's with Allie Quigley, but who knows, because Gabby provides that type of versatility that you can really, she can really play anywhere. And she was, I mean, they used her at the four last year, which I don't think was the greatest idea. I mean, she did that a little bit at UConn, but really that versatility that she provides, she can really sub in for anyone when they need that one defensive stop. So anyways, I think one thing you have to consider with all of this too, though, is that with Katie Lou, Stu, and Faulkner all being out for the time being, Gabby is going to need to play more minutes due just to the depletion of the Sky's bench and depth. I thought we would see more Chloe Jackson with Faulkner and Lou out, but I mean, she doesn't really fit at the one in the way that Gabby does, since Gabby is more capable of shooting. Like, I think Chloe Jackson took 4 3-pointers last year, and despite being drafted as a point guard, she only played 1 year at point when she was with Baylor, so she's just as new to this position as Gabby. And just considering what Gabby brings on defense, and I know that Chloe Jackson has a lot of defensive upside as well, but Gabby is a proven talent. So, like, defensively, I should say. And so going off of that, if the idea is that the Sky are going to try to make a run at the playoffs, I think that it would be ideal for the Sky to start leaning off of Sloot a little bit, just so they can kind of save her for the playoffs and give her fresh legs going into August if they are there or are in contention. And the only way that works is if Point Gabby continues to be unleashed. And I mean, she's only playing 18 minutes a game, and again, that's only 5 games in, so that is subject to change as the injuries continue to pile up for this team. But her per 36 stats are pretty impressive considering where she was last year, and she's kind of taking what she did in Europe when she was averaging 14 points a game, and I think she was averaging something crazy like over 3 steals a game as well. But right now, just 5 games into this season, Gabby's per 36 stats have her averaging 14, 5, and 4. That's going to be a valuable commodity moving forward if this guy do want to make the playoffs. And I think the best route for them right now would be to just give her a bigger workload. And again, the injuries are really piling on, so might as well try to preserve Sloot as much as possible, and even the other guards on the team as well. I think that is why she has to be the 6th most important player on the Sky right now. And yeah, I think we're going to see great things from Gabby moving forward. I also want to give an honorable mention to Jantel Lavender, because I really can't imagine this team without another veteran presence like her. I almost said that Gabby was the 7th most important player on this team because I really think so highly of Jantel and what she's bringing to this team so far. Anyone who's listened to the other episodes of this show, I have ripped the Elena Coates trade because it still blows me away that they only received a 3rd-round pick for Elena. But if it means that they can get the spacing that Lavender provides with that high-percentage 10-foot jumper from the short corner that she seems to hit every time she lets it go, then maybe the Coates trade makes a little bit more sense if you look at it from that positive view. I don't, because really, you couldn't even get a 2nd rounder for the 2nd overall pick from a couple years ago. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole again. I will spare you of that. But Chantel Lavender also, I don't want to make it seem like I'm not appreciating her at all, because, again, they just needed that veteran presence on this team. They were too young. And so I guess trading some youth in Elena and a potential in Elena for Chantel is making a difference this season. So shout out to Chantel Lavender. She's been fantastic as well. Before I get into my fifth takeaway from the last three Chicago Sky games this season, I want to quickly encourage you to subscribe to the show's page on the Apple Podcast app. And if you like the show, I encourage you also to rate and review it. Don't be too harsh on me, please. But if you don't want to find it on the Apple Podcast app, you can also find the show on Podbean. And the link to that is theskyhook.podbean.com. I'll repeat that just in case you were second screening this episode. You can also find the show on Podbean. And the link to that is theskyhook.podbean.com. Lastly, if you want to contact me or anyone else involved with the Skyhook, you can email us at theskyhookmailbag@gmail.com. It is spelled exactly how it sounds, but I'll repeat it one more time. That is theskyhookmailbag@gmail.com. And you can also follow us on Twitter at the handle @skyhookin. Now let's get back to the good stuff. My fifth takeaway from this Chicago Sky season is that Cheyenne Parker will be too valuable for this team not to have her start and or closing games this season. And again, this, I guess starting isn't necessary for Cheyenne, because again, closing games is all that matters. But I still think that in terms of giving her that confidence, that we're going to see at some point that Cheyenne is just going to be inserted into the starting lineup. And look, Steph has looked fantastic this season. She deserves every second of playing time she has received, and really deserves so much credit for what the Sky have been able to do on offense. She's just been that Swiss Army knife that a lot of teams don't have, and we are going to see more Steph Dolson-type players come into this league because of how valuable having a stretch five like her is in this league. So it's a rare commodity. She's a rare commodity, I should say. Yikes. That the organization and fan base just shouldn't take for granted. And not to mention, she has a fantastic Twitter handle as well. But maybe James Wade doesn't care about that as much. But what Cheyenne Parker has been able to do on the boards this season, and how she is the best defensive center they have on the roster right now, just in terms of pure talent, I think we are going to see her being more unleashed in the way that Gabby has been this season as well. Like, I think that both were constrained by not playing enough last year, and I think we're seeing this year especially that Cheyenne has been a freaking beast, and she's not only going to continue the production that we've seen from her this season, but she's going to improve moving forward. What she did in the offseason should just give Chicago Sky fans hope that of what she's going to bring this season, or the potential at least. So this is what she said in a nice piece by the Sun-Times reporter Madeline Kenny. Also follow her. She's been scooping everything up in terms of Chicago Sky news. This is what Cheyenne said in that piece. "Once I became a pro, not playing as much as a rookie and then getting injured and having to sit out, I was still eating the same way in foods. Cookies, cakes, high fructose corn syrup, all the crap they say don't eat. I was still eating that way, but not doing the activity I was doing in college. So I wound up putting 25 pounds over the two seasons." She would also go on to say in the post-game press conference that when she went to South Korea in the WNBA offseason, that they practiced 6 hours a day. I mean, that's something that you hear from high school football, but not basketball. And I mean, except overseas, but we're not exposed to that here in the States. They were practicing 3 hours in the morning, 3 in the afternoon, and that got her into shape, along with dramatically changing her diet. So, I mean, it is showing right now, and even her quote-unquote out-of-shape form from last season wasn't too bad either. I mean, her per 36 stats had her averaging 18-10, which is pretty much identical to the performance she had in the Sky's second game against the Storm. So what she is bringing to this team defensively cannot be overstated. She's only playing 17 minutes per game, and those numbers that she's putting up is, I mean, they're pretty impressive considering the low volume of minutes that she's getting. She leads the team in blocks with 1.6, and the second player or second leading player on the Sky in blocks per game is Steph Dolson, and she's only averaging 0.6 blocks per game. There's just not a lot of toughness inside. Maybe not toughness, but Cheyenne is just looking to take over defensively in the post. And when I think about later down the line, if this team is able to make it to the playoffs, it's really hard for me to imagine Cheyenne not being on the floor for 25 plus minutes a game. You can argue that she is able to provide the type of energy on the court that she's been providing for this team in those 17 minutes per game, but you know, she's able to do that because of the low volume of minutes. She's able to exert that energy and just go all out all the time. But her production is, it's just for real, and they're going to need her ability to take away the post from their opponents. And the better teams in the league have these dominant centers that can just take over games. And I know that, I mean, if you think of the better teams, like they have the Brittany Griner types, Tina Charles types, Sylvia Fault, like Fouls types. Like I know, and I know the Lynx are not doing well this season, but you know what I mean. They've done great in the past because they've had these bigger players that can take over. And just based on what James Wade has said about Cheyenne Parker as well and what she brings defensively, it just, I wonder about what they are going to do moving forward when they have to play those bigger games and take on those bigger players. And Cheyenne's going to be important for the Sky if they're going to be able to take out those players in the playoffs. I think James Wade has to consider that going down the line. But again, Steph Dolson has been fantastic. So it'd be kind of crazy to take Cheyenne out of the lineup right now, especially because Steph is just on a roll. But Cheyenne is for real. And just the effort that she's making of getting her body in shape and the motor that James Wade has been pushing her to use all the time. I mean, you have to be impressed at what she's done, and you have to be excited for what she's going to provide moving forward for this team. She said it herself that she's just getting started, and I'm in the same boat as her when it comes to that. So let's see here. So those were my five takeaways from the last three Sky games. I'm trying to, I don't know how I want to move forward from this because it would be kind of weird not to talk about what Courtney Vandersloot just accomplished on an individual level. But at the same time, I have done extensive segments talking about her achievements in this league, and there's this part of me right now that kind of just wants to break down the next two Sky games, which are going to be against the Fever and Liberty on the road. But how about this? I'll let you guys decide right now. Say something to me if you don't want me to do another Sloot segment. Nothing? All right, well, it looks like we are going to do just that. Hey, you can't blame me for that one. You didn't say anything, so. The dad jokes will never end on this show, folks. I'm sorry, but they just come out of me. I don't know what to say. So, hey, let's do this. Another Sleuth segment. Shout out to Courtney. Going into last game, I think she was six assists away from passing Shannon Johnson on the all-time career assist list, and now she ranks eighth all-time right behind Tamika Catchings after collecting eight assists against the Mercury. She said after the game, "It's really cool to be mentioned amongst some of the best passers and players that have ever played in this league." And I'll just to cut off the quote for a second, I'd argue that not just the WNBA or the league, but in basketball ever, she's unbelievable. Anyway, she would go on to say, "It's kind of just something I take pride in, getting assists because it gives my teammates open shots. I don't necessarily dwell on it or think about individual achievements, but I think later in life I will." Salute. We need more people talking about your play, including you. Stop being humble. Seriously, it's only so charming. I've said it a million times on this podcast and on Twitter, but it is an absolute crime. It is an absolute crime that she has only been named to the All-Star game as a reserve, despite being one of the greatest point guards of all time. Like, and the only time, and she was named a reserve in the All-Star game, or in the All-Star game, and it was her first season in 2011. So she hadn't even really showcased what kind of player she is. And I think she said something after this game that I thought was interesting, or she said it before the game. Sorry, I'm tired and running low on energy here. She was saying that her game isn't really All-Star material, and I'm calling BS on this one, because if the average fan who votes for the All-Star game doesn't recognize what Sloot brings to a team and only values the box score dominance, that really only tells like a third of the story of what it means to contribute to a basketball game, then it doesn't mean her game isn't All-Star material. It just means the fans aren't looking hard enough for the right numbers that would indicate that she is elite. And I'm going to just keep saying it over and over again. It's lunacy. It's moronic. It's any other synonym you have for those two words, that she hasn't made it to the All-Star game, even last year. And I guess you can give... No, I don't even want to give anybody credit for... Or, like, let anyone off the hook for not selecting her last year, because she was fantastic last year as well. And it's... I just don't get how a player who has the highest career assist per game mark of anyone in WNBA history and has played the least amount of minutes and games of anyone in the top 26 in total career assists has only one All-Star selection as a reserve in her first year. Like, start her All-Star campaign now. I mean, not that she needs it, because I really don't think the WNBA is going to let another season go where Sloot isn't recognized for what she's done. And, I mean, the triple-double last year also put her on the map, just recording the seventh triple-double in WNBA history. And, you know, she also was the first player ever to average eight or more assists in back-to-back seasons. So she's on the map. I think people recognize her. And some of the elite point guards aren't in contention for the All-Star game this year just because they're injured. But even if they weren't injured, like, leaving her off the All-Star team from 2014 and on is just a crime. And WNBA fans, do better than that, because Sluti deserves the All-Star game this year. Just looking at the clock here, I don't have a ton of time here, and I just can't do a whole segment on breaking down the next two Chicago Sky matchups. So for the next 5 minutes, I'm just going to throw out some relevant stats that you can absorb as you please, and they're just going to pertain to the next two matchups for the Sky, since I'm not going to be able to break them down. At least I won't be able to break down the one against the Liberty that's going to be on Wednesday night. So the Sky are set to take on the Fever in 2 days from when this show is airing. So one stat to keep in mind going into this game is that the Fever lead the league in three-point percentage, while the Sky are allowing the most three-point attempts per game from opponents, and they're also in the bottom eight in three-pointers allowed per game. I mean, it's a given that Kelsey Mitchell is going to get hers, but the Sky need to watch out for the other Mitchell on the team in Tiffany, who has looked sharp this season. I mean, she doesn't shoot a lot of threes, but when she does, she is shooting 38.5% from three this season. So the Sky had to try to take out those two and try to contain them if they're going to win this game. One last stat on the Fever matchup. For all the problems the Sky have had rebounding the ball since last year, the Fever have not been able to clean up the boards either. So they are 9th in rebounds per game, 10th in defensive rebound percentage, and are 11th in offensive rebounds per game. The Sky lose most of their games to turnovers and second chance points. So they should be able to take care of business just based on the lack of rebounding ability that the Fever have shown this season. Moving to the New York matchup. So the Sky will face the Liberty next Wednesday in NYC. Tina Charles is the fourth player in the top seven in points per game this season that the Sky will be going up against. So far, the Sky have taken on Joel Lloyd, who is 7th in scoring as of right now, Brittany Griner, who is 6th in scoring, Natasha Howard, who is 3rd in scoring, and Dawana Bonner, who leads the league in scoring. The Sky have all gone up against those players this season. Tina Charles currently ranks 2nd in the league in points per game and also leads the league with over 19 field goal attempts per game. The Sky have had a hard time containing players like Charles in the past. Those high volume post shots always seem to kill the Sky a little bit, but they've also been able to shut down the other elite scorers listed at the top. And those players in Joel Lloyd, Brittany Griner, Dawana Bonner, and Natasha Howard, they've all, against the Sky, they've all combined for a field goal percentage of 45%. So the Sky have been able to take down some of the better stars in the league so far this season. The Sky and Liberty are also 3rd and 4th in terms of pace right now. So they are two of the 4 fastest teams in the league. However, they are 2nd to last. The Liberty are 2nd to last in fast break points compared to the Sky, who rank 4th in that category. This just goes along with the idea that James Wade has been really pushing on this team, that he just wants the team to run the break and capitalize off of teams not being able to set up on the other end. The Liberty haven't been able to do that this season, despite being one of the top teams in pace. I think that's going to be one of the biggest things we see here, is just how the Sky are going to be able to run the break and be able to take over while not letting someone like Tina Charles sneak up and take away some of those high percentage shots that the Sky have been able to take advantage of this season. I really do think the Sky is going to win these next two matchups. And just going back to that point about way back about how teams don't necessarily need to be road warriors to win in the WNBA and be successful in the WNBA, they still need to be able to take out teams like the Liberty and Fever. I really do think they'll take care of business. And I think we're going to see the Sky be tested in very different ways when they go up against these two teams. But I think they really are going to finish them off. And I mean, hopefully the Sky will be 5-2 by the end of the, well, by the time of the next episode. So, but I think that pretty much wraps up the show. So thank you for tuning in to another edition of the Sky Hook. If you didn't catch us at the top of the hour, you can find the archived version of this show on Podbean or the Apple Podcast app. The link to Podbean for this show is theskyhook.podbean.com. I will say that one more time. It is theskyhook.podbean.com. And if you want to catch the show on the Apple Podcast app, you can find it by simply searching The Sky Hook Podcast, and it should be the first show you see when you type it in. As always, if you want to contact anyone at The Sky Hook, you can do so at theskyhookmailbag@gmail.com. It is spelled exactly how it sounds, but one more time I'll say it. You can find, or you can contact us at theskyhookmailbag@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter at the handle @skyhookin. That's SKYHOOKIN. Thanks for bearing with me during this episode. I know my voice just wasn't there today. I'm just really scuffling from this cold. So yeah, thanks for tuning in to this episode. And I am James K. And until next time, my friends.